Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about overcoming adversity. Now we all have some adversity, and things happen, and not everything goes the way we expect it to or the way we would like it to, even if we're really, really experienced, and even if we've seen these participants before. Because, well, things change. People change. Participant ideas change. Circumstances change. Stuff changes. And that makes sometimes for adversity, because it's not what we had wanted. So, as we often do on this show, since it's not scripted, let's talk about the types of adversity that we frequently encounter and as a practical solution what to do about them. Yes. So let's talk about it within our context. What types of adversity do we often encounter? And I see a lot of you are here. Thank you so much for being here. And a lot of folk are already answering because you knew I was going to ask that. Because we often start the show like that, don't we? We talk about what it is that we are, what topics we'd like to discuss. Right? Right. You know, this is interesting. A lot of folk are talking about adversity, kind of internal adversity, as leaders. I think the first thing we're going to talk about is the adversity of the feeling of inadequacy as a leader. That's what I'm going to call it. Yeah, that you're not quite up to the task, which of course you are, but we'll talk about it. Yeah, and as a corollary to that, I think, let's talk about I didn't think about it as internal adversity when I set the topic, in all truth and honesty. But you guys are talking about sort of internal adversity that impacts how you act as a leader, right? Yeah, and that's adversity. It certainly is, and possibly even more important than something from the outside. So feeling of leadership inadequacy. And I'm going to call the second one the fear of being proven wrong. A lot of you are worried about the fact that adversity is coming because what you said, what you did, it's going to show up to be wrong, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there are outside. Those are the two kind of internal ones. But let's talk about those. We'll talk about those first because they are indeed items of adversity that nobody's really causing. It's internal. Yeah. A kind of adversity that I was thinking of, actually, when I set the topic, was I'm going to call it bullying within the group. Oftentimes, it's one person might be a little group within the group that are just being obnoxious. Yes, the bullying. How about the next one, that we have adversity because the circumstances have changed on us? That happens a lot, especially with complex issues, and especially with complex issues that are kind of ongoing, right? That's taken a while. Circumstances change, and sometimes very quickly. Mm-hmm. Adversity from opposition groups will be our next one, I think. Yeah. Adversity from, and people are talking about opposition groups being created to us, right? Yeah, and that's kind of targeted adversity. Mm-hmm. Yes. We're gonna have a lot of topics. We haven't made it to the recipes in like 3 weeks, so we're gonna try. Really, we are. The next one being what I'm gonna call preconceived notions, right? adversity that comes from people coming in with an idea that they're truly loathe to get rid of. Yes, it's also called bigotry. This is true, too, sometimes. Mm-hmm. Depends what the preconceived notion is. And, yeah, it's our final one because we're going to run out of time. I think we're going to talk about, this happens a lot in it when we see adversity. Sometimes we have competing experts, right? They're telling us completely opposite things. And sometimes we have a boss, a superior, somebody not in the group but who has maybe brought us in or is the supervisor of the participants, for example, who's also kind of, I'm going to put it in with competing. He or she is not on board, really. They've given it lip service, maybe, but they're not on board. So let's talk about these types of adversity. How about leadership inadequacy as a type of adversity? That's internal, right? Because, it's a good point. People are saying sometimes it's external because as your leader, you're leading this group, but somebody who's above you or sideways in a different group that you need to work with are inadequate. That's a good point. It's not necessarily personal feelings of inadequacy. It could be an, oh my God, what kind of idiot am I dealing with type of inadequacy. Yeah, I know, but you would never say that out loud, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Quite a few people, yeah. Mohammed and others are saying that you need to be the most prepared of anybody so that you're not inadequate, and also so that you can help leaders who are, right? And, yes, a lot of people do what I always recommend, and we talk about on prior shows, archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. A lot of you are talking about the fact that in order to be the most prepared, you require a position statement from all sides. I do. An actual written position statement. I want to know, going in, what people want, at least in the initial, right, what they think they want, and what they think their position is, what they think is going on. I get required from everybody. It is not circulated. It only goes to me. It is confidential. I do not show it to nobody. I do not show it to the other participants. I don't show it. It's personal to me. I read them very, very carefully. And if they're unclear, which sometimes they are, I actually will connect with the parties individually before we get together, and we'll talk about it. We'll think about what it is that we want and what it is that, what our expectation is, right? I will actually do that. The reason being is that it speedlines the process. Second of all, I want to know where everybody, yes, the conferences are private too, individually, yes. Just like the papers, the statements. I want to have clarification before we get there. And then I want to know how close we are. How close we are to reaching consensus. And if I have an actual in-person meeting with each of the participants, each of the parties, beforehand, we get some clarification, we get some modification of expectations right then and there, right? Yeah, which is a mighty fine thing. Mm-hmm. Yes, we'll be needing it. So we need to really be the most prepared. Also, I will meet with the other, if there are other leaders, right? Let's meet with them too, right? Now, I won't show them the confidential statements that I've gotten from my participants unless I have permission, right? Sometimes, especially in the corporate world where I deal a lot, but also with organizations, sometimes there's a leader who's already in place within the organization or a person who is a position within the corporation, and they are, well, they want to be like a co-leader. You're not the only one, right? It's like leading by committee. Ooh, it's awful. But no, sometimes you have to do it. And so you need to get the other leaders together, maybe individually, if you think some of them are not so hatsitatsi, then together, if there's more than one. I've done as many as a whole frickin' committee of leaders. Yeah, there were four others. Mm-hmm. And they all thought they were the lead leader. And they were wrong. I know this because I am the lead. And they give suggestions. And they let me do it, right? And the suggestions are usually in our meetings together to talk about it, and not in front of the participants, because we make a unified stand, a unified, like I tell you with your participants in your group to the media, that's what we do in the event that there's lots of leaders, because we can't all simultaneously lead and talk at the same time. Mm-hmm. And they have to know that I am, well, all right, it's true, yes, I am the expert. Right? I am. I've got lots of experience. You are too. And as the expert in leadership of this particular type of group, issue, etc., I'm the voice. And there's consensus behind me with my other leaders. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oftentimes, they don't even care to come so much. They just want reports. They want to be designated a leader, exactly. They want the credit, but they don't necessarily want to do all the work, and they're glad if someone else does. But this is something that needs to be settled out. This is something that needs to be settled out beforehand so that we can okay, yes, true. When we deal with media, and we've talked about this in prior shows, archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com, I always say that you don't let everybody deal with the media, right? You appoint a spokesperson to represent the group. And then you decide what that spokesperson is supposed to basically say, right? Right. Same thing. We're going to represent one leader, me, is designated as spokesleader, so to speak, and I handle it. And then, but I'm not greedy, and we all get credit, and we meet together, and we discuss it. Sometimes, if you've got a co-leader who is really quite competent, sometimes they come in and lead if it is a specific area of their expertise, right? Yeah, they're brought in as the expert, because they are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you have to work it. It depends on the personalities. It depends on the aptitude and the willingness, right? All of those things, yes. Mm-hmm. So everybody needs to be prepared, and you decide the leadership stuff before you see your participants. Yeah, this is a good point, too. Quite a few people, Liz and others, are saying that sometimes the other leaders are kind of the participants. It's a leadership group, so to speak. In that case, we're in business. We don't have to have I take the lead in the discussions, and we reach consensus amongst ourselves, right? The main thing to be, I think, as a good professional leader and expert, is to not be greedy for the public accolade, because that's what they really want, the other leaders. They want, it enhances their employment, right? It enhances their reputation. Go for it. I always figure go with God. Go do fabulous things. Let's get this done. And we'll all take credit. You can say you were the Tarzan of the group, if you must. Mm-hmm. Although we all usually take equal credit. The reason being that the other people don't want to have you be the credit taker either, right? It's a team effort. And I explained very carefully the concept of team. It kind of eludes us sometimes, right? Right. Yeah. So, preparation. Pardon me. Meeting individually beforehand. Meeting individually during. Never heard anything either, right? Right? Yeah. So we're going to have it all settled out and then go forward. So nobody's inadequate. Everybody understands what's going on. Transparency, right? For internal feelings of leadership inadequacy, which some of you are speaking about, yeah, you were talking about yourselves and kind of a feeling that you haven't got this. That's where the preparation comes in, right? And Aggie and others are talking about volunteering so that you can get an idea of how other groups are doing it, so that you can get an idea of how to act, what to do as a leader. Yes, some of you are talking about an internship. Internship is usually for credit, for like college credit, so you'd have to qualify to be an intern, but some of you might. Especially if you're young and you're going to college and you know you're going to take a leadership role. Very interesting to see how it's done. And also give you a reputation in the community of competence, assuming that you are. Right? Right. Yeah. That's a very important thing. Yes. People are talking, well, okay, the idea is to become a participant. Let's not leave this topic for a second. The idea is to become a participant so that you understand how to be a good leader, right? Yeah. If you see it from that side and you kind of watch someone who's a good leader, you'll learn how it's done. And you'll learn how the participants feel about it. And that's very interesting, too. Because it gives you some insight as to how to be a good leader, a really effective one. Right? Right. Yes. Fabulous. This is an interesting point that Suki and others are making, that sometimes you've got a leadership inadequacy adversity problem because you've had a prior failure and you need to restore your reputation. Right? It didn't work out. This happens, well, not very often, but it happens occasionally. As you get more experienced and more, all right, I'm going to confess something. I suppose it doesn't happen to me anymore because I don't take every client that comes to me. And that's the truth. I don't have to. I'm not desperate for clients. And if I think something's a real dead dog, Just, I probably could, but I don't have the time to really resurrect that. Sometimes things have gone real. By the time someone wants to bring you in as leader, things have really, really taken a bad turn, right? If that's true, and with your experienced eye you can see that's true, I don't take those cases. And that's the practicality of it. If I can see I don't have the time to sort that out, and I can see, I think it's more of an attitude question. The attitude of the person who's bringing me in, for example. Yeah, I think somewhat of it's an attitude question. And I think to myself, no, this is not worth the time and aggravation that it's going to take. Yeah. And that's an attitude question, it is. Maybe it's my attitude, I don't know. Yes, that's quite possible. It might be my attitude. But as you get more well known in the profession, you'll understand, and more experience, you'll understand that some things, some cases, some issues, it's gonna be hard to sort it out. You're going to have a lot of infighting on it, and you just don't want to deal with it. So I confess that. I kind of skew it towards success. If you can't do that, or if you must be the leader for one of those groups, and it doesn't work out, What you need to do is restore your reputation. First of all, you need to make it clear why it didn't work out. Not blame somebody else, but blame the fact that it was too late to be brought in. And train your employer, I'm going to call them, because there's somebody that has asked you to come in. Train them to bring you in earlier, right? As in at the beginning, before it gets all wound up, right? Yeah. Bring you in earlier. If you must do one of these groups, you're going to have to put a caveat on it and say, you know, this is pretty, there's an awful lot of water under the dam, a lot of animosity. I need to change the group dynamic. I need to change the participants, right? You're right. Yes, you got to try to start fresh, with new eyes. You can restore your reputation by volunteering and having a big success on the next one, right? Yeah. Yes, you need to make it clear that you were brought in too late, right? Yeah, brought in too late. I try not to be brought in on the way too late ones. And I've taken on some doozies of a challenge. I mean, I'm not scared, and I have taken on groups that are really, I mean, really, they hate each other. And but there's still a lot of folks, George and others, are asking me how I determine if something is too far, if something's dead. I'm thinking about it. Because I can feel it is what it really is, but that's not the answer that you want to hear. I think I judge it by whether or not how much control I've got been given, right? Because if they want you to come in and fix it, but they want to give you no latitude, that's a bad thing. Got to have some latitude if it's broken, right? I want to know how much control I have. And the answer is you must give me latitude. I want to know if I can change the participant makeup because that'll be important. And whether or not I need to do it or we can have a complete change, we're going to just do it a different way, right? That has to do with my control as leader. The issues still have to be alive. I'm thinking about that. The issues need to still be alive. There needs to be something that must be done. It's important. Somebody's got to fix it. You can't just let it go because it's such an important issue, such an important thing to do. I think that those are the requirements. I need to really have control and to really have carte blanche on the participant makeup, and I need to be by the person who's bringing me in, if they're high enough up, or somebody who's high up, so that if I say, if you don't stop doing that, I'm going to report you to, fill in the blank, someone who can impact your actual employment, and they will back me up and not go, well, boys will be boys. Yeah, if they'll back me up, that'll make a difference as whether I'll come in. Yeah. Because you have to have a stick when you come into a situation that's already broken. You have to have duct tape. You have to, it's not really a stick so much, it's more like duct tape. You have to have the ability to fix it in addition to the skill. Skill I've got. The ability I need to be given, right? And the issues still have to be live. It still needs to be done. It's not just because they fought with each other and like that, now it's too late. Well, if it's too late, people, it's too late. Yeah. So it needs to be still be viable. Okay. Let's get on to the next one because we're going to run out of time and we'll never get to the recipes. And then you all go, you never get to the recipes. Sorry. The next one's fear of being wrong, being proven wrong. As lots of you say, Liz, Aaron and others, nobody is perfect. We're not. We're humans. Nobody's perfect. I'm wrong all the time. I try not to make statements that are wrong, but my thoughts are often wrong about what's going to happen and how people are going to react, and I have lots of experience. Yeah. Hussein says you need to learn to be flexible and impartial in learning different viewpoints. You need to be flexible and impartial in learning different viewpoints. Yeah. Everybody's coming in with different skills, different experiences, different ideas. Let's think about them, right? Yeah. Let's think about our new information, right? Yeah. Let's think about what we need to do. And let's also think about what Thomas and others are saying, that you need to double check that what you have is facts and not disguised opinions. Yes. Because you might be wrong. Hey, nobody's perfect. But let's listen to everyone and let's double check. Let's do some research. Let's find out that what we are dealing with is, as Thomas says, facts and not disguised opinions. Facts and not disguised opinions. Yeah. We want to know going, right? We want to know where you got that, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you're wrong, right? Yeah, this is true. Throughout all of these, there's the 5W questions, right? So that we can find out what's going on, what's the underlying. Who, what, where, when, and why, right? That's how we know something is a fact, an opinion, a preconceived notion, which we're going to get to, right? Mm-hmm. Let's find out the foundation. Let's find out what that is. Let's find out how we know. Let's find out where we can get more information. Who, what, where, when, and why? The 5W questions. Yes. Mm-hmm. And always, 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 even if we don't state them on the show because we do run out of time, these civility rules apply to everything, especially if you're feeling that there's adversity because it might make you feel a little cranky because you are doing a fabulous job. It's just that they don't understand that as a concept, right? Right. Yeah. And so you might be feeling a little out of sorts about it. And the answer is don't be, because we're going to have the civility rules at their base. And it's the only rules the Recipe for Peace Now really has. At their base, the civility rules say we will not be rude to each other. Everybody gets a turn. Right? Yeah, we're going to do that with bullying, aren't we, which is our next one. And so we're going to segue into it, right? And the main thing is that if you are truly wrong, because we're doing fear of being wrong, if you are truly wrong and you had kind of promoted it as an idea and like that, for God's sake, admit it and move on. Yeah, don't dwell on it. And don't let other people dwell on it either. Nobody's perfect. Mm-hmm. So bullying within the group is our next type of adversity. And that goes to both the 5W questions, because we want to know why. And it also goes to our civility rules, right? And the civility rules say we will not be rude to each other. We will have everybody take a turn. We will act in a civil manner at all times. And we, as leader, are models of the civility rules. You cannot breach the civility rules, lose your temper, get nasty, bully yourself. Yeah. You cannot and expect other people to adhere to them. We are good examples of the civility rules at all times. Right? Right. Yes. You cannot breach them and then expect them to be followed. Mm-hmm. The civility rules. We will not be rude to one another, right? We will take turns. We will not. Now, what if the question is being asked, and this is a very good question by quite a few people, Natalie and others are asking, what if the bleed doesn't stop? Understands the civility rules, doesn't give a darn, right? What should we do? Well, this is the matter that we talked about with how much control do I have as a leader? And if you don't give me autonomy, if you don't give me control, I don't want to take the position, I don't want to take the job, because I need to be able to work the group so that we can reach consensus and go forward. I need some power, right? Yeah. I need to be able, for example, to dismiss the bully from the group. Out. You can't be here anymore. It's a good example for others for the civility rules, right? Right. Yeah. Replace them. Yes. Sometimes the reason that someone is being quite awful, actually, is because they are certain that they can't be dismissed. They are important to the process. They know that they are Teflon, that they can't be thrown out. We're going to have a little private discussion with them. And then this goes to, especially during the timeouts when we have the food, which who knows if we're going to get to talking about the food today. Yep. But we're having a wonderful discussion. It's important. And you need to be able to report the inappropriate behavior to someone who will back you and has control over the bully's livelihood. Right? Right. Important. That has to go with your leadership parameters, your leadership control. Now let's go to the next one, because we're going to run out of time. One reason for adversity is because circumstances change. Yes, if you want to see bullying, there's an entire show on it, archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Yeah, where we talk about bullying and the civility rules in various ways and various kind of enforcement procedures. Yes. All right, I will briefly say that. I was just trying to move on, so we're running out of time. One of the ways to control outbursts and keeping the floor and like that and not letting anybody else talk is to time everybody's moment to speak, right? And make a presentation and then have them raise their hands as we go along, right? And you might even need to time that. If you know that you've got someone who is trying to grab the group and not let anybody else speak, that happens sometimes. I know a lot of you use different kinds of methods. They are all perfectly valid if they work. Anything that works is good. I personally use an actual kitchen timer. Tick, 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 ding, that kind of a thing. Because everyone can see it, and then everyone knows that they've had their fair amount. They're not being cheated, right? If you keep time with your clock, with your phone or something, then people feel somehow they might have been cheated because they didn't get enough time and somebody else has more. Yeah. The question is being asked, do I allow people to give their time to someone else who's probably the one that's trying to bully the group? The answer is, generally, yes, because it's your moment to speak. If you think that somebody else will say it more eloquently and needs more time, you can give him or her yours. But if you keep doing it, we would like to hear from you, right? We'd like to know what it is that you think, too, because you're a participant also, right? Yeah. I generally will allow that. Yeah, it kind of makes a click. That's a judgment call. I'm going to say it depends on the circumstances. And that's our next topic. Circumstances change, right? Yes, because initially I might do it, but I might say, we never hear from you. We want to hear from you. Don't just give him your time. Tell us what you think. Tell us your opinions. Tell us what you think we should do, right? Yeah. And don't just kind of be a shadow in the group. Mm-hmm. Because circumstances change. I might have allowed it at the beginning, but now I'd like to hear from you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And circumstances do change, which does cause adversity. Mm-hmm. Pardon me, took a sip of water. The main circumstances change is funding, some sort of money. Economics has changed. That happens with some frequency, right? Things kind of change. Economics change. A grant is not given or renewed, for example. That's kind of bad. Yeah, things change. Funding fails. And that does create adversity because now we have to go and find more or cut back in some way or maybe join with a different group. I see this quite a bit. In my area, there's a lot of very good groups that are quite devoted to their cause, and they're all kind of similar. They've all got leadership, and they've all got their own funders, and they're all kind of scrambling. Can I say that? They're not scrambling because they're incompetent so much, but it's hard to be smallish, right? And so what they do is a lot of times they consolidate. Now, that in and of itself is the bringing in of an expert to help you to do that, which would be us as leader, because there's a lot of bits and pieces and nibs, and you don't want to lose your membership, right? Yeah. And there's some fact-finding as to, well, let's just say the truth of how many members you've got and what kind of funding's behind you and like that. It's like a marriage, right? The partners have to go in with open eyes. Yeah, it might not be a bad group. It might not be a bad marriage. It might not be a bad consolidation. But we want to really do it with knowledge all around of what we bring to the table. Right? Right. That's the tricky part. Mm-hmm. And for that, they do need a third-party impartial so that nobody feels that somehow there's distrust. Which there kind of isn't, but you know there's an old expression that I like to pull out in those situations. Trust but verify. Yeah, trust but verify. Exactly. Yes, you all like that. It's not that we don't trust each other, but let's bring in third-party impartial, which would be us, to verify and to help us to understand the ramifications of our joinder. Yeah, trust but verify. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the funding that sometimes causes the consolidation. Sometimes you have consolidation happening because a strong leader, somebody who founded the group, for example, is no longer working with the group. Not that they've huffed off or anything. People get old and they pass away and like that. I mean, things change. We see that a lot. Sometimes groups have been in existence for 20 years, but the leader can no longer do it, the founder. The real heart behind it has died or gotten too old or ill, right? And they can't do it anymore. But the group is good and the cause is good and they can join with others of like mind and make strength in numbers. And that is a good idea, but it's also something that has to be done carefully because you don't want to blow your funding and you don't want to lose your members because they don't want to. You have to explain it to them that it's a good thing and not just bad things happen, right? Yeah, it's a marketing ploy. I suppose it is. Yeah. Anne and others are saying it's a marketing ploy, really, kind of. It is. To show that it's a very fine thing that we get together and we make a bigger group and we're all fighting forward still, right? Yeah. I see this a lot in sometimes social value groups, but this is kind of a funny thing to say, but a lot in the groups that fight for research and for accommodation like that, for like health things that haven't been cured, and they're still working on a cure, like cancer awareness, like pediatric. There's different kinds of groups where they work to keep funding, work to keep the media, work to keep awareness. Yeah, and it still needs to be done. And they're still amenable to each other. It's just that somebody has to tell them that they're amenable to each other is the key to it. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And sometimes you have adversity and circumstances change because the makeup of the group changes, right? Yeah. And, yes, Padma and others are saying that the new people need to be brought up to speed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it takes a minute for them to really be a part of the group dynamic. And when you've got new participants, the group dynamic itself will automatically change, right? Because you've got new people with new ideas, with new capabilities, with new expertise. Yes. So sometimes the group dynamic changes kind of regularly because it's an assignment, for example, right? And the people are only there for a certain designated amount of time. And this is fine, except that you need to know how long, and you need to stagger it so that you don't get everybody leaving and being replaced at the same time. Yeah, which would really not be a good idea, right? Right, yeah. So the change in the group dynamic is that it is actually changing. Mm-hmm, yeah. And you need, because it happens regularly, you can plan for it. And you can also bring in the new person to kind of shadow the person who's leaving, because you know their term is nearly up. And then when the transition occurs, it's not so much a matter of adversity. Mm-hmm. Because they've already been there. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes the term for being a group member is kind of 3 years, really is, but it's really a 2-year term. But it's a 3-year commitment. Might even be a 1-year term, but a 3-year commitment. Because the first year, you come in as kind of prospective, you know, kind of the rookie. And you become involved, and you understand what's going on, and you are brought in so that when you are the replacement, you're already up to speed. It's smooth. We all know about you. You're already in the group dynamic. And then you might stay longer, another year, might be another year commitment, to train the next person as you were trained. Got it? Yeah. So sometimes things look like they are a turnover that's fast, but they aren't because it has extra commitment to it so that the transition is seamless. Mm-hmm. Because the new person's not that new anymore. They've already been there for some time, right? Yeah. Yeah, even 6 months will do it. It doesn't have to be a year. But you need to have a transition person come in first, if that's possible, and that goes to your leadership control, right, to be trained, to be brought into the group dynamic, really, so that when the outgoing person leaves, there's no problem. It's seamless. And then the next, that new person trains their replacement. You see what I mean? It makes a chain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's one of the things I rather require if we're going to have term limits. Mm-hmm. Because it's so important. Now let's talk about opposition groups, right? Yeah. Let's talk about the fact that we sometimes, that they spring up because of us. They're an answer to us. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's so funny. Muhammad says that's a sign that you're doing a great job. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, he's right, really. Yeah, Muhammad says it's a sign that you're doing a great job if an opposition group springs up in reply to your group, right? It means, wow, we've really doing a good job here. We've really aced it. Yeah. And that we're really having an effect. Now, what should we do about it? As a practical matter, an opposition group is maybe has already been there, but we were the opposition group. Sometimes we come in response, right? We are somebody's opposition group. What should we do about the opposition? Yeah, a lot of people are saying things like outmaneuver them, which is true, and kind of outmedia them and like that. Yes, but a lot of you know what I'm going to say. And what I'm going to say is we're going to reach out. Why not? Let's reach out to them and let's see how come, right? Let's see if we can compromise. Let's see if we can work together and not really be on opposite sides. Maybe we're two sides of the same issue and we want the same outcome, just for different reasons. Let's break out the 5W questions, right? Yeah, why not? Let's break out the 5W questions, who, what, where, when, and why, in a civil manner. Remember, the civility rules always apply. And find out if we can actually work together. And we don't need them to be an opposition group because, well, we're not really that much in opposition. Who, what, where, when, and why? Let's approach them. Let's approach them about joining forces. Right? Yeah. Doesn't hurt to ask. If they won't, which people are asking, well, we do have to outmaneuver them, outmedia them, we need to show that our side is better. It's better for the world, better for whatever it is, just a better idea. Right? Right. Sometimes, if you can actually show that, sometimes the opposition groups will fade because they won't get momentum. And you do have to watch for opposition groups to make sure that they don't gain a lot of momentum. Because if they do, well, it's not such a good idea, right? Yeah. We want them to really either join our side or kind of sit down, right? Well, sit down and shut up is not within our civility rules. But that's the idea of it. But we're going to use civility rules and be a model of that, right? Right. Our next topic for this show is going to be preconceived notions. We all have them, right? Some of us more than others of us, I imagine. But the key is that we want to be aware of our own preconceived notions as leaders and not let it color our thinking. Be flexible. Be willing to modify. Be willing to say, whoops, not this time, right? Yeah. It doesn't mean that we don't still kind of have them, especially the ones that are good, right? Because sometimes they're good. People are talking about bad preconceived notions like bigotry and stuff like that. But sometimes you can have a good preconceived notion and you'd like to keep it, or a neutral one, right? Yeah. Yeah, for example, a preconceived notion because you've dealt with somebody before that they're very efficient or they're easy to deal with or they're a good representative. Yeah. See, those are positive preconceived notions, usually based on experience. Yeah, isn't that funny? Sometimes you can have a positive preconceived notion about a whole group of people that has nothing to do with experience. It's just like bigotry. It was taught to you, but it's a good one. That some sort of person is intelligent, right? And hardworking. Yeah. I think that about everyone, but you know what I mean. It sometimes you can have kind of a positive idea, and that's rather good. And because it it makes you think from a basis of positivity. Yeah, preconceived notions. The key is to recognize them, yes. Eric and others are saying you need to recognize them before you go in so that you can modify them if you need to, right? That has to do with the 5W questions, again, who, what, where, when, and why. I like to ask myself the 5W questions on a regular basis. If I see that I've got kind of an idea about things, I don't ask it in front of everybody and answer them in front of everybody necessarily, unless we're going around. But I like to do a kind of a check on my own ideas, right? Why not? Because as we discussed, nobody's perfect. Yeah, sometimes I think, I wonder if that's a preconceived notion that's valid. Yeah. Yes, the key is to be open-minded to new information, as Jill and others are saying. Yes, this is rather important, especially in this day and age of the Internet. A lot of folks are talking about doing research and finding out if something is correct. Sometimes a preconceived notion is not a fact one, it is an opinion one, and it still needs research, and it still needs to find out if it's correct. And the real key to that sentence is that you need to research all sides and not just stop at the one that agrees with you. Yeah, the one that says, oh, yes, that's correct. We agree with that. You can find agreement on anything on the Internet if you work hard enough at it. But you want to find out what all sides think so that you can really form an opinion and not just only having stuff that says, yes, you are brilliant. No, you need to be open-minded to everything. Yeah, but all sides. Yes, we actually do this a lot. I know that a lot of you have the workbooks from Recipe for Peace now because you've been to seminars and things. Thank you. Fabulous. Steve and others are saying that the idea is to role play and to make somebody actually take an opposing view and really work it out so that we can gain some understanding. Because sometimes it seems like the people who don't agree with you are idiots. But there's a reason that they don't agree with you. And let's role play it out so that we can see what their reasoning is, see how come, and maybe even reach out, right? Yeah. And at least work on our own preconceived notions. Because sometimes they're old, our preconceived notions, and circumstances have changed, right? We just decided the circumstances change all the time. Sometimes circumstances change for that, too. And what the foundation they were based on no longer exists or has changed in and of itself. Yeah, so we have to think about that. Role-playing is a real good idea because then you sincerely find out what's happening. Let's get on to competing experts and sometimes competing bosses, right? Yeah. Yes, you've all got the exact right idea. Sometimes you've got a power play happening. Yes. It creates adversity because, as Tim and others are saying, sometimes they enjoy being the boss and they enjoy stirring up adversity, right? They like a good fight. Yeah, especially the bosses. They like a good fight. They like adversity. Experts, too. It is the goal of many experts to gain some media attention, right? And you don't want them to gain it at your expense. They want to be considered the experts, and so they'll do something or they'll say something or they'll come out with an opinion that's really quite to one side or the other. And then they go into like competition with the other experts who are on the other side Do not get caught up in this. Do not pay for their media attention, right? No, we want it specific to us. And sometimes there are different sides, and we want to hear them all. We pull in many experts on some issues. We want to hear what they have to say. Mm-hmm. Yes. Anna says it's a power play when they enjoy being the authority, even if they're guessing. Yeah. We don't. They're guessing. It's an opinion. We want to know the 5W questions. How'd you get who, what, where, when, and why? What's the basis for that opinion? What's the basis for your pronouncement, right? Yeah. Hmm? We often engage more than one expert. Sometimes we, as we go along, we engage different experts, and then we circle around to the ones prior to ask what they think. Yeah. Because we want to know, and the issues change. What we asked the expert's opinion on at the very beginning might be different 6 months later. That might no longer be an issue because we took advice and we had several different, all kinds of different sides. But now we've gone on, and now we could use another outside opinion. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's multiple issues oftentimes. This is a true statement, too, that sometimes we forget. Oops, we're not going to get to the recipes again. I will try to make time for them next time, but we're having such a good conversation that I hate to just stop it and say, now we're going to go talk about food. The main thing to remember is that also that we are experts, the participants, and us, the leader, because we've looked at this a long time, whatever the issues are. We have studied it. We've thought about it. We have headed towards consensus. We have moved forwards towards our successful outcome. We have become experts. Yeah, we have. Let's think about how far we've come, what needs to be done, and what we think should happen. So sometimes we have become experts too. Mm-hmm. And we like the third-party impartial outsider idea, but we're experts, too, now, from having worked on it so long and hard and diligently. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My friends, we are out of time. Yes, I know. We didn't make the recipes again. We will try to make them next time. I know I say that, but, you know, we've had such a good conversation. I don't like to just quit for the recipes, right? Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for all of your fabulous expert opinions. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Like your prayer shows, they're archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.